This morning, I would like to talk about how we practice when our lives are demanding. It's been a particularly demanding time for me the last few weeks, and I think maybe many of you also have times when things are demanding. You have a lot of commitments, and we have to continue. We just have to continue. So how do we practice with those times? What do you do? Are you all with me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. I think this is a good question. It's a strong question. It's a question that turns us to a deeper investigation. Who are you? What do you turn to? How do you practice? What gives you sustaining energy and a quiet, strong inspiration? I think it's very easy to become self-centered in times like this, and that's a problem. So by self-centered, I don't mean that you shouldn't take care of yourself in sensible ways. I mean losing sight of the broad, true view of your life. In a sense, losing sight of Buddha. So what do we do? There is, of course, Zazen. But sometimes, especially when we're very tired, we need to bring in another voice. One that orients us. It can be very, very helpful. Sometimes this is your teacher, but it's also good to develop skillful ways to do it on your own. So I thought I'd share with you a voice that I rely on. One thing I turn to in writings and teachings that inspires me, reminds me of what life is and what I am. So this source I want to share with you today is a reading from the book Zen Seeds. Zen Seeds. It was written by Shundo Aoyama Roshi. Aoyama Roshi is the head priest and teacher of Muryoji Temple, and the Aichi Senmon Nisodo is a training monastery for women in Japan. She came to San Francisco Zen Center when I was living there, and I was deeply impressed by her presence and her teaching. Shinshu was abbot's assistant at the time, and Aoyama Roshi wrote inscription in the front of this book. Mm-hmm. I'll read you the translation. In whose house does not the bright moonlight shine, nor the refreshing breeze pass through? Well, that's not what I'm going to talk about today, but it's a lovely quote. So Shundo Aoyama Roshi is among the foremost Zen teachers in contemporary Japan. She's written over 40 books, has a wide following of Japanese readers, and is an inspiring example for all priests, but in particular for women priests. And she has trained more than 50 disciples. She was brought to Muryoji at the age of 5 by her mother. Her mother considered her a gift from Buddha. And she was raised by her aunt, who was the chief priest at the time at that temple. And at the age of 15, she ordained as a nun in the Soto Zen school. So I'll say something about, just really briefly, in Japan, our ordination, our priest ordination, is not a celibate ordination. And the general model, the model that most men follow is, and many of them are born into temple families, is raised in and imbued with the spirit of the temple throughout their life, and then they go away to monastery, usually Eheji, Sojiji, for a period of time, year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, something like that. And then they generally go back to their temple, they marry, have children, and serve a temple community. That's the general model. Women, on the other hand, generally enter monastic training and remain celibate nuns for their life. There's lots of reasons for this, lots of history to this. If you're interested, Paula Arai has written a wonderful book called Zen Nuns about the whole relationship of women to the Sotoshu, ordained women. So that's been her life. So after she did graduate studies at Komazawa University, Komazawa is a premier institution in Japan. It's the Soto Zen University in Japan. So after her graduate studies there, she began her career as a priest. She's a lecturer. She leads sashins, so she has a temple. She has a training monastery for women. There are sashins in periods of intensive practice that she leads there. She teaches tea. She's an amazing calligrapher. She teaches calligraphy. And she teaches flower arrangements. And one of the things that's interesting about training at a Nisodo is that these arts are all included in the training. Calligraphy, flower arranging, tea. So her teachings are broad and deep, and she includes in them reverence for Amida Buddha and Kenon Bodhisattva. She is very strict in Nisodo. I know people who have trained in the Nisodo, and it kind of makes Eheji look slack, like slackers. So the training temple, the formal training, is very, very strict. But it is, her aim is to teach Soto Zen to people as a path in ordinary life. She says she wants to teach real zazen, in which people must be led with true kindness. Real zazen, in which people must be led with true kindness. She is honest and speaks with humility. She does not shy away from pointing out, as she says, her petty self that picks and chooses according to its own convenience. And her need, she discusses her need to return again and again and again to listening to the teachings, receiving the teachings every day in all things, with the knowledge, as she puts it, that one is never outside of the palm of the Buddha, the palm of the Buddha's hand. So, rooted in and dedicated to formal practice, she makes clear that this formal practice is companioned by the knowledge, and again, this is her words, this formal practice is companioned by the knowledge that one must throw aside one's robes and become involved in the world in order to weep, suffer, and laugh with other people. One must throw aside one's robes and become involved in the world to weep, suffer, and laugh with other people. So there's this wedding of these ways of practice. These are intertwined. If we lose our humility, we lose our humanity. And if we lose our humanity, we lose Buddha. Period. Full stop. So there is always this returning again and again to our own humanity and the humanity we share with other people and the life we share with all beings. So Aayama Roshi reminds us to practice in a way that welcomes everything that comes as the way. That is a tall order, isn't it? You think that's easy? No, we know it's not easy. But that's what we're called to do. To be taught by everything and to be present for life as it is. Not as a fantasy of perfection that we can concoct, or an ideal world where practice leads to a life of perpetual ease. That's a pretty tenacious one, isn't it? Like, if I just do enough practice, or enough therapy, or enough exercise, or enough fill in the blank, enough zazen, I will have a life of ease. It doesn't work that way. Sorry. If that's what you want, you're in the wrong business. But we're alive to our life. She asked us to stay alert to the ways our lives can be dominated by distractions. And distractions are always available. Or a narrow view that binds us in delusion. To get the taste, the feel of those when we're stuck in that narrow view. So important. So what I'd like to do now is read you a passage, a story, a teaching. I don't usually read something of any length, but I want to give this to you, to us, today. So again, I ask you to listen, as Saint Benedict says, with the ears of your heart. And then we will consider together what this teaching means for us and what questions it raises. So. This section is called Hearing the Wind in the Pines. Zen Master Sōdō Yokoyama, who was fond of grass whistles, I shall always remember Yokoyama's words when I visited him at his home. He said, "When I said to a child, 'I can make a whistle out of any blade of grass,' the child asked, 'Can you make a whistle out of a pine needle?' But it is the wind that makes the pine sing, you know. The voice of the wind in the pines is the most beautiful sound there is. The wind should make pine needles sing instead of me. Either the wind or I can do it. When the wind roars, it is the universe that makes it roar. Whether a voice is loud or soft, it is the voice of the universe. Even silence has a voice, and a mountain has its own particular mountain voice." Now, Zen Master Yokoyama is dead, and the trees and grasses at his home and the wind in the universe are probably blowing whistles in his place. But I wonder if a visitor would hear in those whistles the voice of the universe, the voice of the Buddha, and the sound of Zen Master Yokoyama's grass whistle. The wind goes its own way and is without form. We know it is there when we hear it in the grass or the trees, see the clouds scudding overhead, or feel it blow against us. We cannot see or hear autumn or hold it in our hands. But when the leaves turn red and the ears of rice turn golden, they signal the arrival of autumn. When we hear the crickets chirping at night, or an autumn shower striking the eaves, or pick ripe apples and persimmons, we embrace autumn. Autumn becomes something to savor. The life and voice of the Buddha is everywhere in heaven and earth, and is manifested in all things. As an art historian, Yanagi, wrote, Buddha is the name of something nameless. The life of the Buddha originally had neither name nor form, and is in everything from a tree or a blade of grass to a tile or a stone. It becomes the wind in the pines or in a sail. It is born as people. Whatever form something takes, it manifests Buddha. The magically gifted monkey in 16th century China's greatest comic novel could not leave the palm of the Buddha's hand, nor can we. Whenever I am so arrogant as to think that I have the power to give myself life, I think of this poem by a 5-year-old child. The moment I say, "Tongue, speak," my tongue has moved. When I told my son my tongue to speak, what moved it? The power that moves my tongue before I do is a power that works without rest when I sleep and makes a flower bloom or a horse neigh. Whether we know it or not, the Buddha holds us in the palm of, I will say, not his, but their hand. And they are the power that gives us life. To symbolize and revere that power, people have given artistic form to what originally was without name or form by carving images of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in human form, in the way a child sometimes calls to its mother. We call on the Amida Buddha or Kanon Bodhisattva. Then everything is revealed as Amida or as transformations of Kanon. One hot summer day on Mount Mayu in China, Zen Master Bao Che sat fanning himself. A young Zen monk approached him and said, "The nature of wind is everywhere. There is no place it is not. So why do you fan?" The master answered, "Although you know that the nature of wind is everywhere, you do not know the nature of there being no place it is not." The young monk asked, "Then what is the nature of there being no place it is not? No place." The Zen master just sat fanning himself in silence. Silently fanning oneself is a valuable practice. However well we understand that we manifest the life of the Buddha, we cannot realize our full potential unless we practice the Buddha's teachings. Still, the life of the Buddha is manifest in us regardless of whether we understand or are aware of it or practice the Buddha's teachings. It is manifested in us as we go about our daily lives, for instance. When we conserve water, or plant life, or tackle our household chores wholeheartedly. Whether a dewdrop is on a flower or a heap of dung, the morning light sparkles on it just the same. What a joy it is to know that our finite lives are part of the infinite lives of the Buddha. the folklore scholar Sugei Masumi, who lived about 200 years ago, visited Myōji, the temple where I live, she said, and dedicated this poem to our principal image of Amida Buddha. When I asked about the immeasurable age of the Buddha, in the presence of the Buddha, answer came from the wind in the pines. Every time I read this poem, my heart is renewed, and I strain to hear the wind in the pines, feeling I must live every moment in a way that creates wind in the pines. This is the teachings of Ayaya Maharshi. So we might consider, who are you? And what is your relationship to the sound of a grass whistle, the sound of the wind in the pines, the voice of the universe, the voice of the mountain? Master Yokoyama is dead. Can we hear the voices still? Can we hear his grass whistle? It is autumn. When did it become autumn? We cannot hold it. We know it. For us here, it's a certain quality of light. The ocean at this time of year, the smell of the redwood trees, the sun and fog and cool air. We know these things directly, not the description or meaning of them that we concoct, the reality of them. We know the voice of autumn, the voice of Buddha. The life and voice of Buddha is everywhere. It is reality. The power that moves our tongue, our body, our lives, the earth, all of it, not just the tidy bits. So I encourage us to remind ourselves of this in whatever way works, especially when we feel we're swimming in commitments, stresses, being disoriented by the flood of distractions that come or the urgency we feel. Find these ways to keep perspective, to enjoy gratitude and reverence, to come to life, to be renewed. Please bring your questions forward.